Yeah, we're skipping church too. This is Sports Sunday with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back to Sports Sunday, Sports Radio 810 WHB. As that golden voice man said, my name is Joshua Briscoe. I'm going to kick around the idea for a little while of just making the 10 o'clock hour of this show here on 810 like the Chiefs hour, and we've been kind of doing it by default since the draft. And today, I guess it spreads out to the Chiefs and also some other things going on in the NFL that I think are interesting. A couple of things from Pro Football Focus that have come out that have been very interesting. One little nugget here at the front end. They, 6 hours ago, they tweeted out their best interior defenders from 2016, top graded interior defenders in the NFL. Chris Jones, number one. The best interior defender in football last year. And that was the year that Chris Jones wasn't supposed to really be a big part of anything. Remember? Last year, Chris Jones was brought in to be kind of like a depth guy, a developmental guy, because they had Jay Howard, who's now in Chicago. They had Alan Bailey. Both of those guys got hurt, of course, last year. I think the Tano Passanio story is going to be pretty similar this year. Now, he hopefully won't have the kind of opportunity that Chris Jones had, because you want as much Chris Jones and Alan Bailey as possible without Passanio having to step in. Later on also, we'll talk about his tweets that they put out about Jeremy Maclin and how the Ravens plan to use him. And it just drives me crazy. But before we do anything specifically Chiefs, Roger Goodell has done a couple of things this week that I want to talk about. He was here in Kansas City for the Chiefs fantasy camp, and a bunch of reporters and hosts and stuff went out and asked him a few questions. And there's one particular soundbite that I thought was interesting. And it's about the loosening of restrictions on player celebrations. A very, very serious topic. Something that needs to be handled with an extreme precision, with great gravity. Listen to what Roger Goodell said about loosening those celebration restrictions.
A lot of it came from the players. You know, talking to a lot of the players, they stressed the, we want to show who we are as individuals. We play a team game, and we want to do it respectfully. We want to do it where it reflects well on us as individuals, but the NFL in general. And they feel very strongly about keeping a very high standard. And I think that's something that they will do this season, and we're excited about it.
What about the NFL in any way to anybody is respectful? Well, listen, we've got to make sure we celebrate respectfully after we try to commit murder to get a ball down, I don't know, 20 feet that way. Excuse me? We have to have great tact and great composure. It's a team game. We want to treat it that way. We want to treat it with respect. We want to respect the shield. It's a game, man. Like, just, why that? Why do you have to take that part so seriously? And this is like Roger Goodell without his tie. Like, this is like top collar button unbuttoned Roger Goodell. Like, well, you know, listen. Calling the reporter his first name. I don't know if Danny asked him this question, but we're going to make it Danny now. Well, you know, Danny, our players just really want to be able to have some fun out there. And we want them to have fun. It came from the players. But, you know, as long as they have fun in league-approved ways. As long as they have fun in a way that is perfectly outlined by this regime. Also, and Charlie, play 5 seconds of that again. And tell me if a coked-up Energizer Bunny wouldn't fall asleep listening to Roger Goodell read a bedtime story.
A lot of it came from the players. You know, talking to a lot of the players, they stressed the, we want to
show who we are. I just Mike Francesa'd. You know, Mike Francesa, a while back fell asleep during the interview. That just happened just then. And I saw it coming, too. Like, I was just a victim of Roger Goodell droning on about respectful celebrations. Yesterday on Sports Saturday, I think it was Mick's idea. Mick said, you know what, just give him a shot clock, basically. Just say, all right, listen, man, you've got 10 seconds. Don't, I think he said 15. 10 is fine. You can get a good celebration in 10 seconds. Make it 15 after you score. You cross the plane, you've got 15 seconds. Don't assault anyone. And don't do anything that's not allowed on daytime television. And if you want to sign a football and throw it into the stands, unless it ends up being an assault. So don't hit anybody. If you want to sign a football and throw it into the stands, if you want to get a thing of popcorn and throw it in your face, if you want to drop down to a snow angel, if you want to drop down in Tebow, if you want to get your whole team together and have 10 of your teammates stand in front of you like bowling pins, and then you do somersaults at them and then hit them and then they all collapse behind you. As long as it happens in 15 seconds, go for it. Because what's the other side of that argument? Honestly. Like, what, you don't want to show up your opponent? Are you kidding me? You don't think the Jets feel bad every time Rob Gronkowski spikes the ball to the moon? There you go, and that's Gronkowski's fifth touchdown of the day. Boing! There he goes, spiking the ball again. He did that so respectfully. I'm just glad he was respectful about it. Football's an insanely demonstrative game played by insanely demonstrative people. And you want that, NFL. Roger Goodell needs that. You can't have a meek NFL until you get past that goal line. And then you better straighten up, young man. You better get that posture fixed. Or you tuck in your shirt. Tuck it in. No celebrations. I think it's ridiculous. Because the NFL, it's inherently violent and demonstrative and over celebratory, which is why we love it. Those are not criticisms of the NFL. Please hear that. I am not criticizing football. That's why it's great and unique. And if spontaneous acts of joy are the one problem that you have with the league, then you're the commissioner, I guess, actually. Now, if you want to be like, you know what, actually, I have a hard time with football because, like, I can see everyone's brain getting turned into oatmeal and that doesn't make me feel very good. Yeah, man, I totally get it. Whenever I think about that while watching games, I'm like, oh, God, like, this is, like, he's not going to remember this tomorrow. That's kind of screwed up. Like, that's barbaric, actually. You know what I never think? Damn him. He's having too much. He scored a touchdown. Now he's having too much fun. Ugh. Kids are watching this. How dare they do that? Have that fun in front of my children. All those pelvic thrusts. By the way, there is a pelvic thrust rule. Like, Key and Peele were ahead of the curve. Like, if Antonio Brown goes out there and, like, twerks, it's too sexual. We've got to have a better moving target for what is and isn't okay. I think if you go by, like, FCC rules, I think you would pretty much be safe there, right? Like, again, no one watching a football game is going to see twerking and be like, oh, no. I can't watch it. I got to turn this off now. It's like Antonio Brown, jiggle his booty. Also, 15 minutes ago, I watched that punt returner get stretchered off. His head was stapled to that board to make sure his neck didn't fall off. That was fine. But the booty! Sometimes I say things and then I just stare at Charlie until he hits the button that saves the clip so he can use it for a liner later. That's fine. I deserve that. I did that to myself. You know what? If it's okay, if it could, if it's a dance that has shown up in or could show up in a Super Bowl halftime show, it should be legal. Katy Perry had like Roman gladiator strippers or something, right? I'm not imagining. Is that actually a dream of mine that I had that I'm like, oh God, that I just admitted to everyone? There was something crazy. There was some sort of like, you go ahead and talk, Charlie. Charlie's got something to say. You can go ahead and say that while I try to make sure that I haven't just created this fantasy
world. I don't know what
halftime
show you were watching, but...
Maybe I've just been watching too many Katy Perry music videos and they all blend together. Did you see the music video for the Bon Appetit song?
Can't say I have.
Oh, God. I don't. I mean, you can. But don't. It's weird. It is uncomfortable.
As I look it up now.
It's like cannibalistic. It's very strange. You know what? Antonio Brown should be able to score a touchdown and put on a shark costume, dance around in a left shark costume, as long as he has it off again in 15 seconds and is ready to kick the PAT. Not all that matters. Just shot clock. Or eliminate the PAT and give him like a minute. I don't care. Move the game along a little quicker. That's fine. Yes, perfect. This is perfect. So right now, Antonio Brown is like setting his feet in the end zone. He's starting, maybe Victor Cruz comes in somehow and he's doing a little salsa dance. You've got a Roman gladiator stripper walking behind. Like, what's that happening? That apparently doesn't even exist. Little left shark going on. Katy Perry is ascending from the skies. Lady Gaga jumps on a drone. Everybody's dancing. Rob Gronkowski spikes a football. Whoop! Everybody back. Time to get the extra point. I think we solved it. I think that's the answer. Like, if it's not allowed on TV, don't do it. And if it is, you have 15 seconds. Have a rave, man. That's fine with me.
Don't show emotion. Don't show joy.
No.
Don't give your opinion. Just play football.
The only,
and make me money.
The only emotion you're allowed to have while playing football, you have two. Fear and anger. Because you can be furious at whoever it is that you're about to assault on the field. And you can be afraid of the man charging at you, trying to scramble your brain. But those are the only two emotions that you're allowed to have. I'm currently looking at clips of Katy Perry's halftime show to figure out what we could do in the end zone and make this all more fun. She came out riding on that giant animatronic, like, lion thing. And the floor collapsed. Then there were dancing chess pieces. And then Lenny Kravitz. Did you remember that? Did anyone remember that Lenny Kravitz showed up in the Super Bowl halftime show? This is
not a, until you just said that.
No, this is a real upset. One of these halftime shows had scantily clad people. And I just think that's probably more sexual than Antonio Brown's twerking. That's the point I meant to make here. Now to something lighter and more fun. Roger Goodell also said something dumb about Colin Kaepernick. Oh, no. Everybody's in a ditch. Oh, we just cleared off the highways. Just cleared off the highways. Everything, good luck if you're getting somewhere. Open pathway. Everyone's in a ditch. I said the name of he who must not be named. It's a quick thing, but Roger Goodell, he denied that Colin Kaepernick is being blackballed, and he called the NFL a meritocracy, essentially a sort of a society built on your merit. If you're good at something, you stick around in it. And I think we all kind of want everything to be a meritocracy, but we all know that nothing is, right? You can't completely remove politics and emotion, not even like American politics, just like the politics of an office. You can't remove emotion from a workplace. I don't think there is a true meritocracy. I can't think of one. Maybe you want something like the army to be a meritocracy, but I feel like you're still playing favorites because you have emotions. But the thing about what Goodell said here that's really frustrating, and I'm not even, I haven't talked about Colin Kaepernick in a long time in depth here. And I think it's a fascinating subject, but I'm kind of over it because I know exactly where I'm at with this, and I know where a lot of other people are, and we're not gonna move on much, I don't think. I don't think I'm gonna be able to be pulled very far in one direction. I'm guessing most people are feeling the same way. Don't try to move me on this. I know what I think about whatever. You know, if you think that the protest was disrespectful, or if you think it was awesome, or somewhere in the middle, that's fine. I'm not even gonna try to discuss that now. I've done that before, and I got called an idiot 50,000 times in a Facebook comment. That's fine. I got told to stick my head in an oven. That's all right. I think Colin Kaepernick as a backup in Kansas City would have made a ton of sense. That's fine. We're not going to go there again. Don't call and yell at me for that take. It's not going to happen. And Charlie doesn't want to answer the phones. Charlie's just going to block out the phones for the next, like, 5 minutes. The thing about what Goodell said that, like, bothered me to the point of where I'm like, we need to talk about this on Sunday, is how willfully ignorant it is. Like, where does he think he lives? What planet is Roger Goodell on, where the celebration dances are respectful and where Colin Kaepernick isn't on a roster for some reason other than merit? Or isn't on a roster strictly because of merit? Because, like, Austin Davis is on a roster. Blaine Gabbert's on a roster. The NFL, and please, again, don't call and say, last year, Colin Kaepernick was, stop it. Austin Davis has never been good. There are 14 McCown brothers currently playing quarterback somewhere in the league. Geno Smith is a second stringer. Go look at the Jets quarterback depth chart. All right. The NFL, especially for quarterbacks, if you have shown a blip of competency, you get a roster spot, period. Who has shown more in the NFL, Colin Kaepernick or Tyler Bray? There's exactly one answer to that, because one of them has thrown NFL passes. One of them was in the NFC Championship game. One of them had a playoff team. One of them almost won a Super Bowl. The other one's Tyler Bray. There's not an argument as far as merit of Colin Kaepernick as a quarterback. He doesn't have to be a starter. And everything that's come out about his demands to be a starter and his demands for a salary that are unreasonable, those have been shot down by Kaepernick himself in some cases, by people close to Kaepernick across the board. And yes, and Romo and Jay Cutler ended up retiring. Romo is broken, and it's been a long time since Jay Cutler showed his potential. For Kaepernick, last year, he was not horrific. He wasn't very good, but he was not horrific, and he was surrounded by a terrible, 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 terrible team. A truly repulsive offense, especially. Whenever he's had any weapons, he has shown great merit as a quarterback. Even if you can admit that he has shown a spark, you're saying that some NFL team would have signed him if it wasn't for the anthem protesting. Also, he said he's not going to do it again next year, which you can also have takes on that. You can say, well, that seems like kind of a cowardly thing to do. Or you can say, good, it's about damn time. I don't care. That part genuinely does not matter to me. The thing that matters to me is how anyone, especially Roger Goodell, can deny the idea that Colin Kaepernick is not on a roster for some reason other than his protest and the fallout from it. And the place where it becomes problematic for the NFL and becomes problematic to me is with the next comparison that everyone wants to make. Because whenever you say, well, yeah, Colin Kaepernick's being blackballed, not colluded against, I don't think all the NFL owners got together and say, we're not going to sign this guy. But I think every NFL owner is afraid of him. And whenever the this is where this is the problem. This is whenever this becomes insanely hypocritical and insanely problematic. You go, yeah, well, you know what? Ray Rice got blackballed. He did. Yeah, you're right. Now, he was on the other side of his career. He had very little to offer the NFL, but he did. NFL owners were afraid to bring in Ray Rice. He punched his fiance on a video. That's worse, right? The owner of the Giants says, you know what? We can't bring in Kaepernick. He's too volatile. There's too much baggage there. Josh Brown, their kicker, hit his wife. And then they signed him to an extension. Not like the next day, but like the same within months, I believe. Charlie, you can check my facts on that with Josh Brown, with his contract extension and the details of the domestic abuse thing. So Colin Kaepernick is more problematic than a wife-abusing kicker? And the kicker is worth the investment? Remember when the Eagles brought in Michael Vick? Michael Vick killed dogs as a part of a dogfighting ring and drowned them and electrocuted them. Terrible things. Spent 2 years in prison and came back. You know why? Because he's a quarterback who showed a spark. He showed a spark a lot farther back in his past than Colin Kaepernick has, and Colin Kaepernick hasn't hurt anybody. You might not like his politics. You might not like his protest. And if you want to find me in the streets and have a conversation about like what a protest should or shouldn't be, that's cool, man. I'm all about those conversations. I'm happy to talk about that at some point. Not here, really. I don't really care to do that right now. Because no matter what I say, the half of you that are upset by it are going to call and just yell. So I'm cool with just not doing that. But how can Michael Vick, after 2 years in prison for dogfighting, for running a dogfighting ring, where he hasn't even been playing a sport for 2 years, and after committing a pretty atrocious crime, he's a quarterback with tools, so he can send another shot. But Colin Kaepernick is too volatile. Colin Kaepernick is too big of a PR risk. Alrighty then. You're making some super interesting moral judgments, but it's all meritocracy, so we're all just making this up in our heads, right? It's all about merit. Because in a meritocracy, Michael Vick deserves another shot. For sure. I mean, again, he spent 2 years in prison, but it made sense. By the way, remember who gave Michael Vick his next shot in Philadelphia? But if I mention Colin Kaepernick in a podcast and put it on the Facebook page, I get told to stick my head in an oven. I'm totally over that, by the way.
This is Sports Sunday with Joshua Briscoe.
Bleep my boss.
On Sports Radio 810.
Bleep my dad.
WHB.
Happy Friday. Why did I yell that? It was during sports night. I was in with Cody for some reason. And they yelled, bleep my boss, bleep my dad. I don't know why. Happy Father's Day. Sorry, Dad. A couple of interesting Jeremy Maclin things happened this week since the last time I talked to you here on this wonderful time slot we have here on Sunday mornings, one of which is he has a job again. And he had a signing bonus of free crab cakes for life, which is a pretty dope signing bonus. Although also it's going to make the Chiefs look good because whenever Jeremy Maclin gets in the training camp 20 pounds overweight, they're like, told you, there's... Ha! We found a reason! He's 20 pounds overweight. Was he 20 pounds overweight in OTAs? Nope, we just knew it was going to happen. Either with barbecue or crab cakes, he was going to come into camp a big fat fatty. Okay, John Dorsey, you're you're kind of talking like a child. No, I'm not. Fatty, what? But Pro Football Focus put out something about Jeremy Maclin that's really interesting that helps me fight against a take that I really hate. And then also, I've gotten sick of a particular part of the Maclin conversation. We'll unpack both of those things here. Whenever I was running the program on Friday, I was running the board for the program, and Cody was hosting. It was Cody, me, and Curtis were spinning some radio gold. And Cody brought up the idea that Jeremy Maclin was gumming up the works in front of Tyreek Hill. He was contending that, you know, for Hill to develop as number one receiver, he needed to be the number one receiver. And that's what Macklin's job is. And I, at the time, well, that seems ridiculous. That seems ridiculous because this offense is not in any sort of a place to be able to say, you know what, actually, hey, you are at the very least our third best weapon. Please leave. We don't have room for you here. We need to make space for someone behind you, because in reality, the guy he's making space for is DeMarcus Robinson. We talked about him last week, so not my fave. But Pro Football Focus put out this tweet 15 minutes after the program ended on Friday. And this stat completely supports something that I thought I knew but wasn't sure of. I didn't have a metric for. Here it is. This is amazing. Pro Football Focus tweets, the Ravens reportedly plan to use Jeremy Maclin in the slot. Seem bizarre? It's not. Since 2014, only three wide receivers have scored more touchdowns when lined up there. Excuse me. Since 2014, Randall Cobb has 22 touchdowns out of the slot. He's the number one receiver playing from the slot. That makes sense. Doug Baldwin has scored 18 touchdowns out of the slot. Also makes sense. Jordan Matthews, also with 18. That surprised me a little bit more. And Jeremy Maclin has a dozen. I know he's a little bit of a distant fourth in the whole league. Jeremy Maclin, fourth in the league in 2014, catching touchdowns out of the slot. So at least inside the 20s, put him in the slot and let him be a matchup nightmare for some poor little slot corner who's not going to know how to deal with him. And the Chiefs did that with Maclin last year. And if you want to get Tyreek Hill more time outside, as I do, and as I have been saying since literally March, by the way, also somebody like asked Andy Reid about Tyreek Hill in comparison to something with DeSean Jackson, and I wanted to just like pull my own head off. I don't know who asked it. It wasn't a bad question, but it just was frustrating to me personally because I've been trying to have this conversation since March, but I'm over it, which is totally something that a person who's actually over it would say. I'm over it. You want to turn Tyreek Hill into DeSean Jackson, sweet. Do it. You know who DeSean Jackson was super, super efficient beside in a previous life? You know the peak of DeSean Jackson's career? Who the number two receiver was in that offense? Jeremy Maclin! I pushed the microphone as far away from me as I possibly could because I knew I was going to scream. DeSean Jackson and Jeremy Maclin were an incredible duo. But look, maybe that's not Andy Reid's playbook. Maybe Andy Reid doesn't want to make room for those two guys. Who was the head coach for that team that had DeSean Jackson and Andy Reid! It all makes sense. That's part of the reason that I was so hyped up about the DeSean Jackson, Tyreek Hill thing in freaking March. Because the math lines up. The comparisons line up. Andy Reid is playing the role of Andy Reid. Jeremy Maclin's playing the role of Jeremy Maclin. Tyreek Hill's playing the role of DeSean Jackson. You're only recasting one of those spots. How in any universe is it a reach to say that Jeremy Maclin can't play the role of Jeremy Maclin in Philadelphia, or that Andy Reid wouldn't have space for Jeremy Maclin? Drives me nuts! Jeremy Maclin was not gumming up the works. Jeremy Maclin was one of a few good things in the offense last year. And I know that he didn't have an incredible production. But that's the other part of this argument that I am so fed up with. Every time I talk about Maclin on here, or that I tweet about Maclin on Twitter, at JB Briscoe, feel free to follow me. Go ahead and get me to 2,000 followers today. I think I'm at about 1,050, so we got a long ways to go. Every time I tweet about Jeremy Maclin, somebody comes swooping in to remind me. There's this big, wavy, flowy cape behind them as they come down from the sky on their high horse. They come floating down to the earth to bless me with their presence. Somebody comes swooping in to remind me that Maclin was not, in fact, the Chiefs' number one option last year. And he's being paid as the number one option. And that's no good. And I say, yes, thank you, Mega Man. You're right. That's true. You are saying accurate things. He was not the number one option last year. He was being paid like a number one option. Then superhero boy goes, I solved that one for you, didn't I? Oh, I'm so smart and cool and handsome. It's not the point. He wasn't the number one option. He was being paid like a number one option. And that's still not the point. And I can't believe I've been doing this now for, 4 weeks? Maclin and Hill and Kelsey all do different things well. They can play different roles at the same time in a fully functioning offense. In fact, an NFL offense must have several of those guys. It's not optional. You gotta have it. You can't run an offense through nothing but Rob Gronkowski. Just ask Julian Edelman, who just got a big contract from the Patriots. And this offense never had the kind of surplus of talent that justifies cutting Jeremy Maclin. The cap room is great. The offense isn't. And you say, again, you want to play the value game. I'm with you. I'm all about value. Because I'm stuck in this cap hell with the rest of you. But you could have used Maclin as the third option and Chris Conley as the fourth instead of Conley as the third and DeMarcus Robinson as the fourth. God forbid that Tyreek Hill or Travis Kelce get hurt. All of a sudden you're running an offense with Gavin Escobar as your fourth option. An offense that runs through Hill and Kelce and happens to have Maclin as a third option is dangerous. Last year, the offense struggled because Andy Reid wasn't running the offense through Tyreek Hill. He had Tyreek Hill as an add-on. That could have changed this year. Run the offense through Hill and Kelce and maybe Kareem Hunt. Or a healthy Spencer Ware. And Jeremy Maclin. Somewhere down the list. Now, again, was Jeremy Macklin's $12 million cap hit too much for a third offensive weapon? Sure. Yeah, that's not good. That's not good math. But you have to look at the context here, man. Look at the context. Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill combined for roughly a $6 million cap hit. Chris Conley is costing under $800,000. You're coming in a little bit under $19 million for your top four pass catchers, counting Jeremy Maclin. That's just fine. When they're good, that works for me. The Broncos are paying $25 million for Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders. Just those two guys. like $6.5 million more for those two. And the Broncos aren't freaking out about that. I think they're pretty happy with that investment. And now the Chiefs are going to be paying Macklin $2.5 million this year and almost $5 million next year to not play for them. And the Chiefs are saving $10 million against the cap this year. And they're not going to use that money, though. They're not going to use that money to replace Macklin as a leader, as a huge piece of the offense, as a pacifier, as a safety blanket for Alex Smith. That cap space is not going to be used to replace Jeremy Macklin in any of those ways. They're worse off without Macklin in 2017. And the cap space does not justify it, because if you can't spend $19 million on your four pass catching options and have that be a really good set of pass catching options, then you've mismanaged your cap in other places. We talked about that last week. The Chiefs have like $9.5 million in dead cap space now for Macklin and Jay Howard and Ramique Wilson and Kavari Russell and Josh Malga, I think. I've got that list so many times, I think I've almost memorized it. The Broncos have $110,000 in dead cap space. The Raiders have $109,000 in dead cap space. Tell you afford more players, better players. It drives me insane. But if you've got me cornered, 913-3-810-810. Feel free, chime in.
What are you going to do when Joe Flacco finds Macklin for like 10 plus touchdowns this year?
Oh, I mean, I'm ready to bet anyone anything that Jeremy Macklin's going to have a more impactful year than DeMarcus Robinson. I'm ready for that bet. Anybody want it? I'll wait. Huh, the phone lines aren't lighting up. That's confusing. Because again, don't fool yourself. Like, DeMarcus Robinson's the guy stepping in for Jeremy Macklin, not Tyreek Hill. Tyreek Hill's going to take over as the number one, but they're going to be three pass catchers on the field at a time, constantly on this offense. And usually four, especially if you're counting Travis Kelce. I don't know why Chris Conley demands to be felt. I don't know what you've seen from him that makes you go, oh God, we got to get him out there. The only way this makes even a little bit of sense is if Chris Conley for $800,000 plus $2.5 million you're paying Macklin anyway, if he becomes Jeremy Macklin. And maybe there's some hope there. Maybe that's where you're being optimistic. That Tyreek Hill becomes a number one receiver and that Chris Conley becomes Jeremy Macklin. That kind of growth is pretty rare. I'm not super optimistic about it. At JB Briscoe on Twitter, 913-3810-810 is the phone number. If you come in with some fiery hot takes to go ahead and disarm me and just leave me speechless, I'll mail you a DeMarcus Robinson jersey.
This is Sports Sunday with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back to Sports Sunday. I think I've been angry a lot of this hour. It's not really on purpose, but Roger Goodell being in... I am stressed out. I guess I am stressed out. That's true. Roger Goodell being infuriating and then Jeremy Macklin being in Baltimore are a couple things that I guess are doing bad things to my psyche. But we go to the phones now, 913-3810-810. We go to Steven. Let's talk Jeremy Macklin. Steven, how are you?
I'm doing fine. How about you?
I'm doing great. What's up?
Yeah, I was just calling to think. I agree with you wholeheartedly. I think Jeremy Macklin is going to have a better season. But I think he's going to have a better season than everybody on the Chiefs. That's just my opinion, even Travis Kelce, because now everyone's going to be focused on Tyreek Hill as the number one receiver and when you got Jeremy Macklin on your roster, I feel like he's just another threat of it. They have the game plan for. Without him on your roster, now you're just game plan for Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce. That's just my opinion, and I'll listen to your response off air, my man.
Steven, thank you. Yeah, man, we're in the same boat on that. That's what. By the way, like, he's definitely gonna have a better season than DeMarcus Robinson. I'm kind of just being a pain there, but yeah, you can have him up against Chris Conley, or even if you want to compare him to Tyreek Hill this year, that's fine. What Steven said there, I'm in lockstep with what I mentioned earlier. Jeremy Maclin as your number one option, if he demands all of the coverage, the coverage focus from a defense, then he can be shut down. He can be severely limited. But as your third option, you cannot devote good coverage to Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, and Jeremy Maclin. And if you want to say Chris Conley is the guy then who gets really good matchups, that's great. You need to have as many weapons as possible to create as many mismatches as possible. Then a guy like Alex Smith, a guy who is capable of reading defenses, he goes out there and is able to pick out the mismatches across the field. He's going to know, Chris Conley's our fourth option, but he's going up against some 5'9" slot guy. This is going to go really well. The safeties are over there helping out, making sure that Travis Kelce can't get wide open across the middle. You've got help keeping an eye on Tyreek Hill because he's terrifying. If he can run straight down the sideline, straight past you, he can do a little stutter step and leave you behind. We've got a guy on Jeremy Maclin making sure that he doesn't do whatever veteran wide receivers do that's so scary. You put together that many weapons, of course you're going to have matchup problems. Defenses are going to be afraid of that. Back to the phone. Let's go to Nate. Nate, you're on Sports Sunday. What's going on?
Hey, man. Not much. Thanks for taking my call.
No problem. Thanks for calling.
Just want to say that I'm appalled. You know, great quarterbacks can make average wide receivers look great. Alex Smith obviously doesn't have that ability. So I don't understand why you make this move, especially if you're trying to win this year.
Yep.
Anyway, I just wanted to say that. Love your show. Thanks.
I appreciate it, Nate. Thank you. No, you're completely right. You're going to put pieces around Alex Smith to help Alex Smith succeed. Aaron Rodgers finished last season with some scrubs catching passes. At one point, he had three guys I've never heard of and like a shopping cart with a mannequin arm running routes. Truly absurd no names. There's a guy named Geronimo. That's not a joke. The shopping cart was a joke. This is not a joke. There's a guy named Geronimo catching passes from Aaron Rodgers because Aaron Rodgers makes his weapons look damn good. Alex Smith needs weapons. Alex Smith can look better with good weapons around him. That was the whole MO. Everything the Chiefs have done since Andy Reid and John Dorsey got here is about making Alex Smith look as good as he can, about letting Alex Smith deliver the ball to the playmakers. Aaron Rodgers is the playmaker in Green Bay. Alex Smith is not the playmaker here. He's the guy that needs to get the ball to the playmakers. And now he has one less. And it really does. It does not make sense if you're going to say that you're contending this year. If it's a plan to try to make things better for the future, because Patrick Mahomes is a playmaker. He was in college. He was a playmaker as a quarterback. You're setting up for a new future around Mahomes? Fine. But that's what the signs point to in cutting Jeremy Maclin, which is not fun. I say that sadly, because I want the Chiefs to contend again. David, you're on Sports Sunday. What's going on?
Hey, a couple points.
Okay.
First one, I'm totally in agreement with you about Maclin being let go. I really thought he was supposed to have a really good comeback year. And,
agreed.
And I think the Chiefs are missing out being that team that capitalizes on that comeback year.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing, too, that I don't think a lot of people are touching on is Maclin's going to Baltimore, and Flacco throws the ball downfield.
Yes, he does.
I think it's really going to show how lacking Alex Smith is in that department, because I really think Macklin's going to really have a lot of, down-the-field passes. And it's just going to make us, you know, by the end of the year, question, you know, Alex Smith. And if I'm Alex Smith, I'm upset not only because I lose a weapon, but, again, just my point, it's just going to expose him even more.
Yep.
With Flacco throwing Maclin the ball.
David, you're completely right. Thank you for the call. I appreciate it. yes, it's going to make Alex Smith look worse. Now listen, in fairness, the questions about Alex Smith, the doubts about Alex Smith, those have already completely come to fruition. Because the future's here now, it's Pat Mahomes. The Chiefs let everybody know that they have selected their guy to replace Alex Smith as soon as possible. As soon as he's ready. Assuming it's next year, because that's whenever Alex Smith's contract becomes especially dumpable. That's been telegraphed already. For this year, though, yes, Joe Flacco, they're going to use him in the slot, according to reports out that Pro Football Focus cited everything. They're going to use him in the slot well. You put Jeremy Maclin up against a couple of little slot corners on either side of the field. You are making a defense have to deal with something really, really difficult. Joe Flacco has an arm. Jeremy Maclin does not need an incredibly precise quarterback. The things that he did last year to bail out Alex Smith in a few situations were mind-boggling. He made Alex Smith look better just in actual passes to him, not just as a whole, because he did that as well, but straight to Jeremy Maclin. He made up for some bad shots that Alex Smith took. He did that for Joe Flacco. Joe Flacco misses a little bit here or there, and Macklin's still going to bring it in, and all of a sudden you're going, oh man, look at that Jeremy Maclin, 80-yard touchdown. I did have a lot of like anger, I think, in me during this hour of the show. But do you hear what happened at the end there? Three straight callers agreed with me. It truly is the end times.
Welcome to the end of the weekend.
Please don't let today be Monday. Please don't let today be Monday. Please, 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 please don't let today be Monday.
This is Sports Sunday with Joshua Briscoe.
And then what followed was bad even by Monday standards.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Nobody pray for me. It been a day for me.
Welcome back to the show. Last hour was like, last hour was intense. I thought maybe we'd turn it down a little bit, slow down a little bit, but no, Charlie's bringing in heavy beat. Bringing in that heavy bass. And I'm fine with it. Let's keep it up. The phone number is 913-3810-810. Had a bunch of Maclin calls. Last hour I got one here holding over. I am happy, genuinely. Like, I will be content in my soul if we just have calls come in for the rest of this hour just agreeing with me about Jeremy Maclin. Or not agreeing. That's fine. We can argue or disagree. But I'm completely content to talk about this for an hour, even though it's kind of weird because we've been having this conversation for like 4 or 5 weeks. Also, happy Father's Day. Let's go to the phones, 913-3810-810. Let's go to John. John, what's on your mind?
Oh, hi, Joshua. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling in.
Happy Father's Day to everybody out there. I think with the Maclin situation, what we're dealing with is the Chiefs aren't going to say they're rebuilding and looking to build something up in the future for Mahomes. But I think that's exactly what they're doing. He's more injury prone than he has been in the past. It's not going to get any better as he gets older. We're looking at Mahomes maybe 2, possibly 3 years down the road as far as really moving us up. And by then, Macklin's worth to us will be probably very little.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he'll be older. He still has the injury issues. And I think without telling us they're rebuilding, that's exactly what the Chiefs are doing. I think they're going to push Smith along next year if Mahomes shows any promise at all. That'll free up money under the cap, and Maclin leaving pulls money under the cap. I think they'll go for some downfield receivers and hopefully a good defensive end.
Mm-hmm.
and I think that's where they're going without telling us. I don't think they want to tell us that because they want to keep the fans coming in, and we will anyway. We've
yep.
always supported the Chiefs.
Yep.
But I think that's what the Maclin deal is really all about, is looking to the future. And I don't know if his agent talked to the Chiefs. He says he didn't. I don't know if his agent did. But I think that's what it's really all about.
John, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. And I agree with you in a whole lot of pieces there. I think at the very least, you can say definitively, that's the logical conclusion to come to. You cut a valuable asset. If not your number one receiver, you cut a very valuable asset. It undeniably makes you worse this year. So why do you do it? To prepare for the future. apparently it was more worthwhile to cut Macklin this year as far as the 2018 cap situation. They're still going to have to pay him $4.8 million in 2018. They're going to be paying him a lot of money to play for the Ravens in 2018. But I think, first of all, if Mahomes shows any inclination by the end of this season to be a starter, then he will be the guy going into 2018. And he should be, because, again, if when you're playing this cap space game, throughout the NFL, I think you can win one of two ways. You either have an elite quarterback, you have a cheap quarterback who's playing beyond his means and playing beyond his number. If that is something that's within the Chiefs' grasp, then they're going to take it as soon as possible. If Mahomes plays at the exact efficiency as Alex Smith, but at a way cheaper number, even if he's a little worse than Alex Smith at a significantly cheaper number, you have a very good chance to have a better team, because then you can afford to extend Marcus Peters and Dee Ford, if that's what you want to do. At the Dee Ford conversation, we can have that some other day. But you extend Marcus Peters, you eventually extend Tyreek Hill, you bring in another receiving option. You know, if this was 2018, you either going to believe more in Chris Conley, or if Eric Decker was released next year, you say, oh, you know what, this Eric Decker thing actually makes sense here. You bring in Decker to go with the rest of these guys, and you are building for Mahomes. And this is something where I might have to take a little nibble of some crow. During the NFL draft, people were saying, you know, this seems like a team that's preparing for next year. They trade up a lot of assets for Patrick Mahomes, and they draft Hanno Passanio, who is a guy at a defensive end who seems like he's probably a year out and then could be a monster. I kind of poo-pooed that, because you don't usually give up a pseudo-contending year in the NFL for the sake of the future, even though sometimes it's the smart move. Now, again, if the Chiefs are going to really do it and just brazenly say, we don't give a bleep about this year, what matters to us is being ready for Mahomes next year, then they could have cut Alex Smith and saved a ton of cap money and move that whole trend going. Now, what they're doing instead is they're going to give us some interesting, good football. And if Chris Conley takes a big step forward, and if Tyreek Hill starts to look like DeSean Jackson, then they're going to be what they were last year. And because last year, the offense, keep in mind, was not good enough. So if the offense takes a small step back and the defense is going to be healthier this upcoming year than it was last season. You're the second year of Chris Jones. You've got a little bit more stability at the second cornerback spot, potentially. That's good. But also, the scoring defense last year was, I would argue, unrepeatable. So the team is going to be very interesting this year, but it almost feels a little bit disingenuous, if that makes sense. Because we know they're not selling out to win this year, which that can be good. I would not, at this point, want the Chiefs to mortgage the future to try to win this year, because their best chance at winning a Super Bowl, it's like with the Royals. We talked about this with the Royals earlier. The best chance at winning a Super Bowl is 2 years from now. Because Alex Smith is not going to be a Super Bowl winning quarterback in the kind of active sense. And the Chiefs have some flaws here and there that aren't glaring usually, but they are glaring whenever you're going up against Ben Roethlisberger and Tom Brady. But if Patrick Mahomes, at his value, if he outperforms his value, and the Chiefs start spending a little more wisely, carrying some less dead cap space in 2019, whenever Alex Smith's contract, I think, would be off the books, Macklin's would be off the books, Jay Howard's off the books after this year, Tom Bahalis will be off the books after next year. Whenever you're playing with no dead cap space, you've got a quarterback that's outplaying his value. Maybe Roethlisberger's retired, maybe Brady's in his last year or two. If you trust Andy Reid and John Dorsey as builders, and I tend to trust them as builders, not so much as contract extenders, apparently. But if you trust them as builders, then yeah, the Chiefs' best window is in a post-Brady, post-Roethlisberger AFC. But something that the last caller brought up is the comments that Jeremy Maclin made kind of on his way to Baltimore. This was with Mike Florio, I think, of Pro Football Talk. Yeah, Charlie's nodding, so it's law. With Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk, it's about a two-minute clip here of Florio kind of poking around at Maclin about how he found out that he got cut, what's next, his, like, attitude going on. And there are some, like, awkward pauses in here that don't think of these as awkward. Think of these as telling.
Scale of 1 to 10, how big of a surprise was it for you?
11.
How did you find out?
Through a voicemail.
From who?
John Dorsey.
And what was your reaction when you found out via voicemail?
I was upset. You know, I was shocked. You know, apparently they had been trying to trade me for 2 or 3 months, which, you know, who knows if that's true or not. You know, I would just think that, you know, and they're not entitled to tell me anything, but a guy who, you know, is going into his ninth year would know if he's being shopped or not. You know, but, you know, it is what it is. You know, I still have respect for Big Red, still have respect for the organization. You know, I'm not going to badmouth anybody or talk any dirt on anybody. You know, it was an unfortunate situation. They felt like, you know, they didn't want me as a player anymore. So, you know, it is what it is. You know, I'm happy with where I am right now. You know, and I think that might be the last time I talk about what I like to call my former life. So I don't think I want to talk about that anymore.
Well, and just so we're clear, and this is a little bit related to it, they could have come to you, I assume, and said, hey, Jeremy, we're looking at your salary, we're looking at your production, we're looking at your age, we'd like to work something out that you can stay here for a number that makes more sense to us from a cash and cap standpoint. I take it from what you've said that never happened. There was never a discussion along those lines at all?
There was not a discussion with me or my team. I've heard a lot of rumors coming out of there. I've heard, you know, they thought I lost a step, my price tag was too high. Whatever the case may be, you know, I'm ready to play some football. And, you know, that flame that burns inside of a competitor, that thing got a lot brighter. So,
do you think you've lost a step?
Nope.
I think that last answer was his quickest one. That whole thing, especially whenever Florio asked, how'd you find out that they cut you? That was definitely longer than the delayed that's just like embedded in Skype calls. That was like a 2 or 3 beat pause. Like, do we want to make this a story? And then he did. Maclin's frustrated, saying the fire that burns in a competitor is burning hotter now. You don't hear that a ton from pro athletes, because I think usually athletes want you to think that fire is always burning at 100%. And it's obviously not, because there's a reason that guys say, you know, like, oh man, yeah, in the Super Bowl, I played harder than I usually do, or whatever, you know. And, you know, there's just something, special, something extra about playing in a playoff game or whatever. You know, so whenever you're playing on the road in Arizona, you're not playing at 100%? Like, well, no, that's how I am. Maclin was willing to admit there that he's feeling something different now. Talking about his former life. That's pretty intense. There's some pretty pointed comments there. I think it's very interesting. If you want to talk about Maclin, what the Chiefs are doing, the idea of them rebuilding, reloading, whatever, they're not in any way bottoming out, and they shouldn't be. This is not an instance like with the Royals or with the Sixers or with the Jets. Three different sports, three different teams, three different examples of teams that could, should, or are currently, or did previously, bottom out to rebuild. The Chiefs are not in any of those situations. Whenever we say the Chiefs are rebuilding, it's that what the Chiefs are really doing is they're preparing for a new era. And now that felt bad coming out of my mouth, because that sounds like PR garbage for, like, whenever the Royals need a slogan after they lose 100 games. Preparing for a new era. Get ready for Raul Mondesi batting leadoff as we prepare for a new era. I'm not trying to give you a T-shirt because that sounds like a T-shirt for a losing team. But that's what the Chiefs are doing. They're preparing for the Patrick Mahomes era. They want to have a team that's around to win with Roethlisberger and Tom Brady out of the league, which might be smart, but it's really hard to swallow this year. And this is the same thing that Royals fans are going to go through if they do end up selling the trade deadline. Like, oh man, I get it. I understand. It's probably smart, but it's really hard to admit that you're better off trading away some of your best players. The Chiefs just straight up cut an important offensive weapon from an offense that wasn't good enough last year. And for the record, the reasons for the offense not being very good last year, none of those reasons are Jeremy Maclin. It's a very different beast whenever you start to figure out, well, what went wrong last year. And I think in a lot of ways, the Chiefs told you what went wrong last year with their first-round draft pick. Alex Smith took a step backwards. He wasn't making plays. He was just trying to not get in the way of them. And this is where I get frustrated for this season. And as one of the callers from earlier completely hit on the head, Alex Smith is not a playmaker. He is at his best whenever he can make playmakers look good. Whenever he can put the ball out in front of Tyreek Hill, just make a fine mid-level throw, and then Tyreek Hill turns it up for a 65-yard touchdown. That all goes into Alex Smith's stat book. But he's just trying to deliver it. Alex Smith is a mailman. He didn't buy you the package. He didn't wrap it. He doesn't even know what's in there sometimes. That's unfair to Alex Smith. But he delivers it. He just delivers the ball where he needs to go on a good day. Now, I do think this year's going to be interesting because Alex Smith knows that that's his reputation, and he knows that's not good enough, and now he knows he's going to have to do it with DeMarcus Robinson instead of Jeremy Maclin. So I think we might see Alex Smith be a little more willing to push the ball down the field. A little more willing to say, don't give the reins to Patrick Mahomes yet. I'm not ready to give this up. I'm gonna become a playmaking quarterback. Now I think in large part that's not gonna go super well. Because Alex Smith does have some playmaking abilities, both with his feet and oftentimes through the air in ways where you go, oh man, I didn't even realize Alex Smith could do that. But I think he knows what he is. For all the things you can knock Alex Smith for, I don't think you can knock him for being delusional. He's super smart. And I think he's really self-aware. So I don't think he's going to try to be Brett Favre. But I do think we might see a little bit more recklessness from Alex Smith. When he goes, you know, I got to gamble a little bit because this team as currently constituted, it's probably not going to work. 913-810-810 is the phone number. I've got the phone number a lot today, but it's because you guys have been calling today. So I've enjoyed that. I've enjoyed getting to hear your perspectives on the Jeremy Maclin situation or anything else that's going on. But I think for now, I'm done screaming about football. This is Sports Sunday.
This is Sports Sunday.
I think we did two really good hours
with Joshua Briscoe.
And we also did this hour
on Sports Radio 810 WHB.